Hey everyone, welcome back to the Change Your Mind podcast, where we explore personal development, spirituality, and science. I'm your host, Chris Ashley. I have a really amazing guest today. We are going to talk, she's started a foundation after having cancer. She's an entrepreneur. She has a business podcast. She's incredible. So really quick, couple announcements before we dive into it. Head over to the links in my show notes. You are going to find links for my amazing guest, of course. You'll also find a link to my book, Change Your Mind to Change Your Reality. It was endorsed by three experts from the film The Secret, Michael Beckwith, Bob Doyle, Marcy Shimoff. It was also endorsed by Anita Morjani, who had a near-death experience after having stage 4 cancer and her organs shut down, and she went into a coma and she came back healed. So relevant. And then you'll find ways to sponsor the podcast. You'll find links to my courses, my coaching, free downloads, free masterclass, all the goodies. And as always, this podcast is part of the Los Angeles Tribune Podcast Network. Sounds kind of funny that a Tribune newspaper has a podcast network, but we're building a huge personal development branch. It's spearheaded by Mary Glorfield, who is Tony Robbins' executive vice president of production for 18 years. I've just recently been on stage with Jim Quick, with Sharon Lecter, Les Brown, Dr. Joe Vitale. So we're doing amazing, amazing things in the personal development realm. There's tons of other podcasts in the network that are incredible. So catch what we're doing. Follow me on social media for updates. What if the one thing keeping you stuck is the way you think? Welcome to Change Your Mind with Chris Ashley, the podcast where science meets spirituality. And mindset becomes your most powerful tool for transformation. I'm Chris Ashley, author of Change Your Mind to Change Your Reality, trainer, speaker, and lifelong seeker. For years, I battled trauma, depression, anger, chronic illness, low self-worth, and the weight of old stories. Until I discovered how to rewire my mind, reconnect with my divine nature, and consciously create a new reality from the inside out. This show is here to help you do the same. Each week, we explore the intersection of personal development, spirituality, and science, diving into topics like healing, emotional mastery, entrepreneurship, resilience, and the quantum nature of reality. You'll hear powerful stories, gain practical tools, and real conversations that will help you change your perspective, get unshakable confidence, and live the vision your soul has always known is possible. Whether you're navigating a major life shift, building your dream business, or seeking deep healing and alignment, you're in the right place. So if you're ready to break through, take back your power, and create a life on your terms, this is your moment. Let's break free from the patterns that hold us back, awaken to who we truly are, and rise. Your transformation starts now. All right, let's get to it. So with me today, I have Deb Creer. So Deb is an entrepreneur, a cancer advocate, and the visionary behind tryingnottodie.live. With a background in communications, marketing, and PR, she's navigated diverse roles from spearheading communication strategies for large corporations, small companies, and nonprofit organizations to funding her own marketing agency over 20 years ago. We're going to have to talk because my background is in marketing too. But more importantly, diagnosed with stage 4 triple positive breast cancer in 2015 and thyroid cancer in 2023, she founded tryingnottodie.live, or is it .live?
.live.
.live, that would living. Make more sense. As I'm saying it, I was like, that would make more sense, in 2022. As a dynamic advocate and speaker, Deb passionately champions resilience, empowerment, and community building amid adversity, inspiring others to navigate the complexities of cancer with courage and power. So welcome, Deb, and thank you for the work that you're doing in the world.
Oh, well, thank you. And hearing your intro about everything you're doing, holy schmoly, you are an amazing young woman, and I'm very honored to be your guest.
That's very sweet of you. Thank you for saying that. So yeah, you've listened to a couple of the shows. I always start them the same way. And that is by asking my guests what their origin story is. So what put you on this path to found tryingnottodie.live? And I guess also a little bit of background about your own experiences with cancer.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I told people I never wanted to be cancer girl, but right with the cape, do 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 do, right here I come to save the day. But I worked, you know, many years ago, I worked for an oncologist and I worked for the American Cancer Society. So I tell people I know just enough to be dangerous about all of this. But I have always wanted to help people. I mean, that has always been, you know, I think that's why we go into marketing. That's why we go into PR. We're helping people to solve their pain, to make money, all those other things too. But it is something that I was just raised to do. You volunteered, you served, you did all of those things. And so, you know, I was diagnosed with cancer, and initially I was diagnosed with stage 0 cancer, which is, you know, you don't really worry about it, you know, easy peasy. I didn't have an oncologist for several months, and had a couple really fun biopsies. And then they decided, no, this was, you know, a little bit different. And so they wanted me. And so there was no lump, there was no bump. I had what was known as microcalcifications, which the computer sees. They're that small. And of course, I go back to Dr. Google, which is what we do, right? Don't do that.
Folks. Don't do that.
But I discovered that women of a certain age get these in their body. It happens when the hormones in your body change. And the vast, vast majority of the time, obviously, there's no problem. But in a rare circumstance, they start to coalesce and you will discover and special. They weren't overly concerned, had those biopsies. And then we said, you know what, let's go ahead and pull some lymph nodes. So I had the surgery to take lymph nodes, and 8 of 12 lymph nodes were positive for cancer, which meant I went from stage 0 to stage 3, just poof. I was like, well, this was a fun trip. And then I got an oncologist. Now, you know, I chose to do the very traditional approach. I was going to do chemo, then I was going to do surgery, then I was going to do radiation. One of the things that I tell people that is absolutely critical is you have to do what is right for you, not for your doctor, not for your spouse, not for your kids. You know, and so you might say, I'm not going the chemo route. I'm not doing any of that. Or I'm doing a combination. You know, whatever you feel is best for you, that's what is best for you. So, you know, we decided to do chemo first. And I had a very, very large dose. I had 8 different drugs. And darned if it didn't almost kill me. I ended up with septic shock. Ended up in the hospital. The only reason I survived, and at that point I was the only person that ever had survived because I'm special. But my doctor had another patient die from it. So she knew what it was. And so I spent about 7 weeks in the hospital, lots of various things, got out, decided to have a double mastectomy. Part of that was because of my age. I'm like, you know, who needs those anymore? They just get in the way. And I did not do reconstructive surgery because, again, who needs those? And got a complication from that surgery that my doctor had never seen, because altogether now I'm special. But then things went well. I sailed through radiation, which, considering my complexion, they were actually really kind of surprised at, because I sunburn walking to the mailbox. So they were kind of surprised at that. I was doing well. You know, I do have a lot of complications based on having septic shock. I mean, you know, it kills, you know, it did almost kill me. I mean, my doctors were arguing about how fast I was going to die that day. And I very distinctly remember thinking, excuse me, I get to vote. So I've been through all of that. At one point I did tell my doctor, I said, you know, I have a pain in my rib, and they did another really fun test, and that came back as inconclusive. And so that was when they said, you know what, we're just going to say it is stage 4 metastatic triple positive breast cancer, because then they can do whatever treatment they basically wanted to do, that I agreed with. And So, you know, went merrily along. I had lots of other little surgeries. I did have a skin cancer, which that was really fun. And then I got thyroid cancer last year as a totally different cancer. So I have had three. But in amongst all of this, my business coach, God bless her, said, you know, you didn't go through everything you went through without using it to help others. And that, and I told her, no, I don't want to be cancer girl. And, but I realized she was right. You know, doctors would already call me in to speak with med students, to new patients, people like that. And so that was when we started tryingnottodie.live. It comes from the fact that at one point, now I'm an only child, and you know, at one point I was on death's door. And so my mom came from Kansas and, you know, spent, you know, many, many months with us. And, one of my medical people came and left, and I got the disapproving mother face, right? And I went, what? And she said, you did not say thank you. And I said, oh, for God's sakes, mom, I'm trying to not die.
Always a mom.
I know. But then, you know, what I thought of was the fact that when we have a serious illness, we do get so caught up in trying to not die that we forget that we have to live. Mm. And, you know, maybe it's 5 hours, maybe it's 50 years, but we have to live. And, you know, and so that's where tryingnottodie.live came about.
Wow. Thank you so much for sharing your story.
It's wild.
I just have to say, I said this within the first 10 seconds of talking to you, but I love your energy. And I just, from my own personal experience with people who have been sick in my life, mm-hmm. and like illnesses I've gone through, it's the people with that amazing attitude and mindset like you have mm-hmm. that are the true survivors.
Right.
That aren't falling into victim mode, are living, right? Oh, yeah. Even in those now, 5 hours. So
I have pity parties. You know, I have days where I'm like, this sucks.
Of course, because you're a human.
Yes. And it would actually be scary if you didn't. I mean, you know, we can't all be Pollyanna, right? But the thing is to go, okay, I know I'm going to have a bad day. I'm going to give myself the grace to have that bad day. And then I'm going to go on. You know, and I think that's the thing that's really important.
Absolutely. So I want to hear a little bit more about your septic shock story, mm-hmm. because mm-hmm. that's pretty crazy. The fact that you almost died and doctors thought you were going to die mm-hmm. that day. Mm-hmm. So what was it like to have septic shock? What did you go through? What was going through your mind? Like what actually happened?
So it was very strange. So I had my first chemo and it was on October 30th. And then on the 31st, I'm coming up on those anniversaries. Woo. Mm-hmm. But on the 31st, we had trick-or-treaters. I gave out candy. I was hunky-dory. I mean, you know, there was really nothing that I was overly concerned about. Couple days went by, and then I started feeling kind of bleh. And that was the technical term, right? The bleh. And even started running a little fever, a little nausea. You know, things that when you think about it, you're like, well, yeah, I just have massive doses of chemo. This is normal. Sent my husband to work. I mean, you know, it was just a little fever. It's really funny. They tell you if it's 100.1, you call in. I don't know what the 0.1, but you know, and so it never quite got that far. It was just this little, and just this kind of little nagging myth. And then the next day, he went to work, and at about noon, I called him and I said, I think you need to come home. I'm just really not feeling good. I think you need to come home. And but still the same. I mean, you know, just, you know, a little bit higher fever, still not too concerning. And then the next morning, you know, my fever was starting to spike. It was starting to go pretty high. Called into the doctor's office and they told him, you know, get her here now. There's something that's going on. And before we could do that, I realized there's something very seriously wrong. It was not chemo. I had an excruciating pain in my lower left side. So I knew it wasn't my appendix because that's your right side, but this was on my left side. And I mean, it was just excruciating. So he called the ambulance. I got to meet the fire department. Part of the reason that we called the ambulance was I knew he couldn't get me down the stairs, out to the car, all those things. And they have this really cool little thing, fire departments do, that's like this little tractor that you sit on and it goes down the stairs. Funnest little amusement park ride in the world, right? And so, you know, and I remember getting into the ambulance and still, you know, having this pain, but I'm like I am now, chatty Cathy. How you doing? Pretty day. And so we're, you know, toddling off in the ambulance. Now the hospital was 5 minutes away. And that is part of why I survived. The hospital was very, very close. And we stopped. And I knew we hadn't gone far enough. And I said, you know, why are we stopping? And the very nice EMT said, well, it's a stoplight. And I said, I don't get lights and sirens. And that is literally the last thing I remember for hours. I bottomed out. I crashed right there. And of course, then I got lights and sirens and off we went.
But you missed them.
Yeah, I missed them. I was so bummed. You know, when I finally came to enough to know what was going on, I was in ER and they were, you know, at that point they knew, yes, it is septic shock. What are we doing? You know, I was tachycardic, which my heart rate was about 200 beats a minute. I thought I was going to fly away. I mean, it was like, this is really fun. I was in shock. So I was just shivering like crazy and they could not put enough blankets on me to get me warm. And what they determined was somewhere in this process, and it happens, you know, like we said, everyone's less than 1% of the time, I had developed a hole in my colon. And so the icky nasty that is in your colon went into my bloodstream. And that was what caused the septic shock. The surgeon said, nah, no point in even trying. And my oncologist, who it was the one who was on call, but I she's with my practice and I knew her. She's a little bitty blonde thing, little cute thing. And she gets up in his face and she says, you will try. And so he did. I remember coming to afterwards and I was still intubated because they weren't sure if I was going to have to go back in. And for anybody who, you know, they say that's it. Oh yeah. I mean, I knew immediately I did not want that stuff in me. I mean, I was trying to take it out. I remember the nurse literally laying on me to try and keep me from pulling those tubes out. And they went, go ahead. It's okay. Take them out. That surgery was about 7.5 hours, you know, just to try and do everything. And then obviously massive doses of antibiotics and lots of follow-up surgeries. About half of my digestive system died as part of that process. I had this really weird thing because they kept having to go in. I'm going to apologize in advance. Nobody be eating right now. They left the big abdominal wound, which is about 12 inches. They left it open and they would go back in every once in a while. It's the weirdest thing in the world. My kidneys I have kidney disease now because of the septic shock, but you know, I remember, you know, even, you know, during all of this being like I am now, you know, laughing and joking. And I think that was really, as you said, a big part of this. It was like, no, not my time. I'm not going to do this. And, you know, and as horrible and awful as it was, because it was horrible. I mean, at one point I had 8 different IVs, yeah, I mean, it was, bleh, you know, but I still remember thinking, okay, it's still not my time. I'm going to keep going. It was amazing, but it was the excruciating pain that was my signal that something was not normal. But I tell people, you know, we hear the stories about what happens when you are going through chemo. You get nausea, you get this, you get that. Always, always tell your doctor because it might not be normal and they might be able to do something about it. So, you know, this is very much a big part of this is you have to be honest with your medical care team, you know, and I was like, no, something is not right. And if I had waited probably a half an hour, you and I would not be having this conversation.
Wow. So what did the pain end up being? Was it your kidney?
So it was the colon that had ruptured.
It was the colon. Okay. Yeah.
And they ended up taking out part of my colon. I was very, very lucky. I never had to have even a temporary ostomy. They were able to stick everything. I am held together inside with glue and duct tape and probably chewing gum. But they were able to splice everything back together. It's just, there's half as much there as there used to be.
Wow. So how are you doing today with half your digestive system gone and kidney disease? Like, how does that affect your day to day?
I nap. I take naps, and I'm actually still in treatment because I could not. Now I'm 9 years out, which is good. 10 is our target date, right? But 9 years is really good. I am still in treatment because I could not do chemo. And so I have a port in my shoulder. I go in every 21 days. I was just in last week, and I have an infusion of a drug. It's a different type of drug, but it's designed to help with all of this. It's funny, like there are some things that I cannot eat, like fast food. I'm really not supposed to have fast food. I'm supposed to eat very nutritiously. That's kind of hard sometimes, right? You want French fries. If I have French fries, I pay for having French fries. But it's just, and I remember asking my surgeon. Now my surgeon has operated on me at least 5 times. I would walk on fire for him. I mean, he is, and he is just an absolutely wonderful man. I fired some doctors through this process also, but I asked my surgeon, I said, are there things I should eat or shouldn't eat? And he said, there's some things you shouldn't eat. And he gave me this very short list. And he said, and for the other stuff, try it. If it doesn't work, don't eat it again. Okay. It has made me eat more healthy, which has helped, my cholesterol, my husband's cholesterol, all of those things. But yeah, it is, it's kind of there. On my kidneys, I developed kidney stones. They have gone in 5 different times, including just in July, and taken out kidney stones. That's gotten harder each time because the anesthesia is just harder on me. The procedure I had in July was, you ready? The 34th surgical procedure that I had since this started. And my body's like, no, we don't like this. You just keep going.
Wow. Wow. You have been through a lot. I mean, you had me at like 8 different IVs. I was like, oh God, that feels so claustrophobic. But that's a lot of surgeries and that's a lot for your body to go through. And it's, God, our bodies are incredible, aren't they? The fact that they could take out part of your colon and then it just reattaches and the fact that you've gone through so many surgeries and and drugs and your body is still going. So I know you said you're still in treatment. Are you technically in remission or no?
Technically, I suppose you would say I am, because no tests since the very, very first tests and that big, massive dose of chemo, no tests. I take that back, except for, the little skin cancer, which that was just annoying. And the thyroid cancer, there have been no tests that have shown any cancer in my body. And the thyroid cancer was actually a fluke that we caught it. I had told my doctor that my arm, the left side is the bad side. And I had said, I get a pain in my left arm. Now we knew that it's like a scar tissue type of thing because I get it when I sit at my desk too long. And then if I stretch, it goes away. I was telling him and said, you know what? We haven't been able to do any CAT scans on you in quite a while because there's been no reason. Now we can say pain, because God love insurance companies, right? And we have the best insurance. Very rarely has anything been denied. And so, I really do appreciate them. And when you're somebody like me, you actually get an advocate with them. I mean, it's kind of bizarre. So they did the CAT scan, and yes, this was just scar tissue, and I got to go to physical therapy, and that was better. But in it, they showed enough of my throat that they saw that I had 2 lesions on my thyroid. And so I had a couple more really fun needle pokey tests. And it turned out to be papillary thyroid cancer. I asked the doctor, was this a spread of the initial breast cancer? And he said, oh no, it's always a primary cancer. I went, yay. And you know, so my surgeon, like I said, my surgeon who I love to pieces, I go in for him to take my thyroid out. And this man who I love dearly says, we'll put the incision in one of the wrinkles in your neck so it won't show. And I went, thanks. And it doesn't show, you can't tell. But yeah, it's, yeah, so it's, and so I don't know, am I one of those people who's just going to continue having these kind of random cancers? Who knows? You know,
So did you ever treat the skin cancer or the thyroid? It was just like, remove it. And
So the skin cancer was so small that he burned it off. And I didn't even have to have a stitch. I mean, it really was small. And it was one of those things where I was in my primary care doctor, and years ago I had a hysterectomy, and then, you know, I've now had a double mastectomy. So when I go in for an annual physical, I don't take off my clothes. You know, any woman who's ever gone to, there's nothing for them to look for. And so I don't take off my clothes, and we sit and we chat, and she wants to, you know what, and she finally said, is there anything else? I said, you know, I got this sore on my arm that won't heal. Off I go to the dermatologist, right? And then, you know, I'd never been to a dermatologist. You know, I have all these freckles, all these things, and I'd never been to a dermatologist. But yeah, he was able to just burn it off. And now I get to do, and he hates it when I say this, I get to go in every 6 months and do the strip and spin. But I'm like, he's like, don't say that. I said, that's what it is. You strip and spin. I mean, you know, and nothing else. And the thyroid cancer we caught so early that aside from removing my thyroid, there was no further treatment. Now I do have to, because the thyroid does something in your body until the day you die, I do have to take medicine, but I did not have to have any cancer treatment for it.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So can I ask you a hard question?
Of course.
You know, a lot of what a lot of my guests talk about and what I talk about in my book is, you know, because we also cover spirituality on the mm-hmm, show, mm-hmm. is, you know, things happen for reasons, for mm-hmm. lessons, for experiences we're meant to go through, for, you know, fill in the blank. We're not on the mm-hmm. path we're meant to be on. There's mm-hmm. a million different right. ideas mm-hmm. about it. Mm-hmm. Do you feel like you know why you have gotten cancer 3 times?
You know, I'm not sure. You know, there are people who would say, you know, God never gives you anything that you cannot get through. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure about that one. Because I'll tell you what, there are times where that's sometimes where I'm angry. You know, the mm-hmm. why me? Why did I get this? And maybe it is because I can help other people. You know, maybe that's what it is. I do believe that there's something that is there. You know, I have a pretty large group of supporters, and I call them my tribe members because I'm a warrior. I'm not a patient. Blah.
I love that.
I am a warrior. And, mm-hmm. and so we build our tribe around us. Right. And, I always know that when I'm in, you know, wherever, especially surgeries or things like that, all those people are around me. And there's this bubble that is around me. But there's also, and for people who, you know, I know a lot of your folks are just listening, but I'm going to show, this is my tattoo. And awesome. it says warrior. And I started with just warrior, and it's on the inside of my arm because I can feel it. You know, when I am at the doctor's office, I can put my hand on it. And so I had warrior done. And then somebody said, well, that's boring. And so then I added my angels. And so I have my mom, my dad, my mother-in-law, I have paw prints for my my dogs and my cats. Wow. And you know, all these various symbols. And the really weird thing, and maybe it's just because of where it is on, you know, my inner forearm, frequently this area is warmer than the rest of my skin. Mm. And, but now, okay. I have a story about my dog tattoo. If you have time. It's a little short story.
You know, I'm a dog lover.
Let's I know. I knew you'd love this. So I have a podcast, and it's a business podcast. And I was interviewing a young woman who I had never met about spirituality and business. Going to be very interesting, right? I, like I said, I'd never met her. had no idea. We weren't connected on social, any of those things. And my dog passed away that morning. So when I started the interview, I told her, you know, I'm not quite as perky as I usually am. And she's, oh, and I said, yeah, we lost my dog. Now, I never said a name. I said, we lost my dog. And she said, well, yes, I see her. She's there with you. And I kind of went, hmm. And she said, but I have some questions. If it's okay, if I can ask these questions. I said, sure. And she said, why is she surrounded by jewels? And I said, well, her name was Diva.
And oh my God.
I know. It's going to get you now. Then she wanted to know, she said, Diva wants to know when she goes on your arm. Right?
Goosebumps everywhere.
I know. You know, and it was...
You're going to make me cry.
So, of course, we've had lots of animals before, but I'm like, well, you know, I don't want to be haunted by Diva. So, there's little paw prints that are there that represent all of our animals. But I do believe that they are there with me when I'm going through all of this. We're not alone. And I think that's, you know, anybody who's, you know, I've talked to people and that's one of the things they say is they have never felt so alone. Now, part of that is because we tell people, I'm fine. I don't need anything. I'm okay. I don't want to be a bother. All of those things. And so we push people away, but it's also scary for people. You know, I looked really, really, really bad when I was in the hospital. People would come in and leave. I mean, you know, they were like, ah! And they go, you know, or cry, and some things like that. But, you know, we don't have to be alone is what I'm trying to say. And so, you know, my angels are here and they are right where I can feel them and touch them anytime I need to.
I love that. So much. And, you know, it reminds me, we were talking before we pressed record that you were like, I'm an open book. You can ask me mm-hmm. anything. And I was like, okay, well, that's good. I'm comfortable talking about illness because mm-hmm. my parents, you know, my mother especially was very, very sick for most of my life. And my dad had cancer. He beat it. The radiation like totally destroyed him. Mm-hmm. And then he died of long COVID actually. But you're right. You know, I have a friend that was stage 4 breast cancer, but like for a very long time, like she was on different treatments and mm-hmm. was doing okay. And I remember like no one ever talked about it with her.
Right. And like, it's this ever. Huge elephant that is there.
Yeah.
Right?
And she was always like, thank you for talking about it or asking mm-hmm. about it. But like mm-hmm. people, I think people are uncomfortable, mm-hmm. right? Yeah. Or maybe like
they don't want to make us feel bad.
Right. Mm-hmm. But it's also like ignoring it is so weird.
Mm-hmm. Right. And I know that people don't know what to say. You know, yeah. I had somebody the other day who I hadn't seen in a while. And he said, so you still got that cancer thing going on? And I said, well, yes.
One way to do it.
And then he didn't know what to say. It's like, oh, but yeah, that one kind of threw me. My husband was like, well, that was different. It's like grief, right? You know, you don't want to say, so how are you doing since your husband died? You know, we don't want them to feel bad and we don't know what to say. And I tell people it's okay just to say, I'm sorry you're going through this, you know? And then if they want to talk about it, they will. If they're just kind of wanting to not deal with it that day, they're going to say thank you and they go along. But yeah, we don't know what to do. I've lost friends. I mean, I have people who dropped off the face of the earth. Don't know why. Obviously that friendship had ended. I just hadn't realized.
Oh, I thought you meant like you've lost friends to cancer.
Oh, no.
You mean you've actually.
Yeah. Yeah. They could not deal with this.
Yeah.
And then I had people who I didn't even think knew I existed, who have been some of my biggest supporters. And I think that's one of the things you kind of discover those things. But for the people who say, we don't know what to say, I always tell them, you know, Hallmark has cards. You know, send a card, you know, that, you know, maybe it's a funny card, maybe it's a, you know, serious card, but send a card. Because we just want to know that we're being thought of, you know, more than anything.
Yeah, I think people are going to find that advice really helpful. And that's so sad that people have just dropped out of your life. I mean, that has nothing to do with you, and you know that. Like, that's like their own healing that needs to take place, right? Their own issues that need to take place. And that's good to hear that, like, saying sorry can be enough. Like, I know, like, sometimes I think I had a guest on the show recently where her husband had died. He had committed suicide. And I found myself saying, I'm sorry. And then I was like, you know what's interesting? Like, my dad died a year and a half ago, and it would make me so angry when people would say, I'm sorry for your loss. But it's just like grief, right? You're just dealing with your own grief. That's where that comes from. But yeah, I think acknowledging, because you're like, you so wonderfully said in the beginning, like, you're still alive and you want to be seen and you want to be heard and you want to know that you're being thought of and cared about. And I like that you said, like, we're never really alone, and that even people that you didn't even know knew you existed stepped out of the woodwork. And, like, social media is weird like that, right? Like,
I know. Yeah.
It's like, even like small things, like when I had my baby and stuff, I mean, that's not a small thing, but like in comparison, it was like all these people were like, oh my God, I've been rooting for you. I know you've been, because I went through infertility for 8 years and it's like, oh, I didn't even know that you like logged onto Facebook, let alone. So that's really interesting. So you've created this amazing, is it a foundation? Is that what I call it?
It's not. We just call it an initiative.
Okay.
You know, will I make it a nonprofit? I don't know. Okay. I mean, you know, I don't want to be the Komen Foundation. I don't want to be, you know, any of those. So I don't know if, you know, if we'll do anything besides just, we've got this great group of supporters.
So what do you say to people who are going through cancer right now? Like, what's your biggest piece of advice?
You are in charge. You know, you have to be your own advocate. When I went into my doctor last week, I told her, you know, we need to have a discussion. There's some stuff I'm not happy with. And, you know, we did. We had that discussion. And, you know, if you don't like, you know, I mentioned I fired doctors. They were not incompetent or anything like that. Most of it, we just didn't get along. I mean, like, they don't always understand me. No, you know, they don't like Chatty Cathy coming in, and, you know, or more importantly, sometimes they don't like the fact that I know what's going on. I've researched it. I'm like, no, that's not what's going to happen. Or this is, you know, this is what we're going to do. And I just, you know, nope, I want no part of that. You go be a doctor for somebody else. You're just not my doctor. But yeah, we are the people in charge. But we need our advocates. You know, we need some other people who are there supporting us. You know, somebody at the very start of my journey sent me a thing, and this is where this comes from. It says, you know, fate says to the warrior, you cannot withstand the storm. And the warrior responds, I am the storm.
And that's awesome.
Yeah. I mean, you know, that's just, but warriors should not ever be alone. We do have to have our tribes. And sometimes, you know, we have to send people along. I mean, you know, they're not a good part of our tribe. You know, I've had people who said, because you did such and such and such, you caused your cancer. No, don't need those people in my life. Right? I mean, that's like telling somebody who smokes, you know, no, things happen. You know, we certainly don't want them to, you know, we don't do anything to cause it on purpose. But yeah, you have to build your tribe and get the people around you who are going to support you. You know, and you really have to be honest. You have to be honest with yourself. You know, like I said, sometimes I'm like, I'm not having a good day. I'm just going to go back to bed, and I'm not going to feel bad that I'm doing that. I'm not, you know, I'm just, that's the way it's going to be. And we have to be honest with our caregivers. I think one of the worst things is people say, hey, Chris, how you doing? And you're going to say, I'm fine. All right. Fine is a four-letter word, and it covers anything from I can run a marathon to I'm going to pass out. So, you know, we can't expect them to treat us unless we have told them what's going on. You know, so we have to be honest with them, and we have to be honest with our friends and the people who care about us. You know, when they say, how are you doing? say, I'm doing okay, or I really need somebody to go to the grocery store for me, or whatever it is. Because nobody is a mind reader. But you know, we can't complain that nobody's helping us if we're not asking for help. And I think that's really hard for women, right? You know, women don't say, hey, I need help, because we're independent. We're the, you know, we do all that stuff. Nah, you know, and somebody told me, and I love this, they said, honor the people who are asking if they can help by letting them help.
Yeah, that's so true. That's so true that no one's a mind reader, and you can't get resentful at people for not helping if you're not asking for it. That's really important. So you said something earlier in the beginning. You said you had worked for the American Cancer Society, you worked for an oncologist, you knew just enough to be dangerous. What does that mean? What do you mean by that?
I recognize the words. You know, and I mean, I discovered that my cancer had spread when the word metastatic jumped out of my online chart. Now that should have never happened. You know, that should have not been where I discovered that. And that's why I don't have that one doctor anymore.
I'm surprised. I'm really surprised that they sent you results before.
Oh yeah. And her response to me when I said something was, well, that's not her responsibility. And I said, oh yes, it is.
It's crazy.
But yeah, I mean, it just, but yeah, when people talk about stage zero, stage four, metastatic, chemo, all of those, I know what those entail. You know, you know, but I also know that I know just a very minute amount. And you know, we laughed about Dr. Google. No, you know, if you Google breast cancer, I don't know how many millions of answers are going to come up, but millions, you know, and it might be a good place to kind of start. But I tell people, you know, my sources are Mayo Clinic and the American Cancer Society, but that is going to be for more traditional types of treatments. If you're looking for something different, you know, even just things like yoga, meditation, nutrition, you know, nobody ever thought, hey, eating, you know, is, you know, what you're eating is going to help you through some of this until fairly recently. You're going to have to look in different places, but you know, do that, look in the, and find that. And if you're not finding the answers you want, keep looking. You know, and that's, you know, if you, like I said, if your doctor is not doing what you want, then you get a different doctor.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. My dad fired a bunch of doctors too when he was going through it. And then after he went into remission, he bought his oncologist lunch every year for the rest of his life, on the year anniversary. So, you know, is there anything that you think that you've learned from this whole experience, like looking back on it, like ways that you've grown as a person or just things that you've come away with?
Hopefully I have become more forgiving of people. Now there would be people who would argue with that. But I've also learned that there are people that I don't want in my life, right? You know, there are toxic people that I just don't want to deal with them. You know, it's funny. I saw something on Facebook today. Somebody was saying, you know, everything's going on in the world, you know, with the hurricanes and the wars and all this, all these people are happy, happy on Facebook. And now I didn't say this, but I wanted to say, then get off Facebook. I mean, you know, it was like, if you don't like what you read here, don't, you know, but you know, it's, I think I've learned to, like I said, give myself more grace. I really try and be funny about a lot of this. You know, when I go in, you know, they, what's your name? What's your date of birth? Well, I tell them, but if they know me, so, you know, the people who get to see me every 21 days, I am Anastasia Beaverhausen, and they've decided I'm Princess Anastasia Beaverhausen. And it was so funny because when I had my kidney surgery there in July, I told them, you know, because I'm Chatty Cathy, I told them, you know, I also go by the name Anastasia Beaverhausen, and which they all thought was really funny. And then, you know, they got you on the bed and they're trundling you off down the hall to the OR, and I'm doing the princess wave.
Hello. Oh my God.
And the funny thing was how many people waved back, you know, and I'm sure they were thinking, they've given her the happy juice already. But, you know, especially our medical folks and our caregivers, they're going through so much. if I can make them laugh, I'm going to try and make them laugh.
I love that outlook so much. And that, you know, that cliche, laughter is the best medicine. Mm-hmm. That didn't
come from
nowhere, right? Yeah. Like it goes back to your mindset and your outlook.
Well, and physically it makes changes. It, you know, it raises endorphins. It does all sorts of things that help with that.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I'm like thinking about other people who are maybe like going through this situation. And like, I think that people are afraid going into surgeries a lot. Mm-hmm. And that's where like they shut down a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, sometimes doctors aren't always like explaining everything that's happened because they're so, I don't want to say like numb to it, but it's like, it's gotta be such a grind.
It's gotta be very hard for them. Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think from both sides, what we can take away or what I'm taking away from this is like, we're all still human and we can have a little humanity, right? We can, we can joke with each other. We can be a little more compassionate towards one another. We can say thank you, like mom said.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, one of the things that I discovered in all of this, is there is a gene that makes us redheaded, right? There's, you know, and it's a recessive gene. There's actually, then when you toss in the fact that I'm blue-eyed, that's a double recessive gene. It's very, very rare. But part of that means that a redhead naturally needs more anesthesia. It will wear off faster and we have a higher pain tolerance. So, you know, now because, you know, you go into surgery and you're like, you know, you got your little cap on, so they can't see. And I'm like, hello, redhead. And the anesthesiologist goes, oh yeah, I know, I need to give you more.
That's fascinating. You
know, but yeah, it's kind of a bizarre thing. Now, I will admit this is enhanced, but I was a natural redheaded at one point. But yeah, you know, you joke, you and I were joking before the program. You know, and I mentioned it, I did not have, reconstructive surgery. So I have, artificial boobs, you know, or as they call them, because I live here in the South, they are my bosoms. Right. But you know, you can't just say that, you know, so I have named them. Of course I've named them, right?
Of
and I have more than one pair. So the fancy pair that the insurance paid for that are really uncomfortable. I know I have boobs paid for by the insurance company, right? Those are Thelma and Louise.
Amazing.
The ones that I love that I wear, and okay, TMI here, folks. Normally I don't bother, right? You know, but women's clothes fit better, all those various things. And so, you know, there are times where I have my girls on and I tell people, you know, it's a really important meeting if I have my girls on. But they are knitted knockers. And I actually got them from a nonprofit organization, knittedknockers.org. And it's exactly what they are. They're just these little knitted pillows. And they are, of course, Lucy and Ethel.
Amazing. I love it.
But yeah, they're my bosoms.
Love it. I didn't even know that was a thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that totally makes sense because if you want to wear something and you don't want to do the reconstructive surgery.
Mm-hmm. Right.
What you know, a nice option that you could just take them off at the end of the day.
I know. And it's the funniest thing because, you know, they're not overly comfortable. And then of course, you know, that leads to all sorts of other questions. Did you decide to be bigger? Did you decide to be smaller?
Did you get like different sizes?
And you know, you're like, today I'm going to be busty. Different color wigs, right? A woman's body is made for whatever she had before, you know? So if you were a double D, you should probably stay with a double D. I was not all that large before. And so Lucy and Ethel are just kind of little pillows. But yeah, it's, and it is funny because I realize that people, they look, you know, but yeah, it's just, it's something that you do. If I had been a lot younger, I probably would have had reconstructive surgery. But I was like, no, you know, just don't want to deal with it.
And didn't you mention to me you had issues with the surgery?
I did. I was home and actually I'd finished a podcast. And so my port is in my right shoulder. I finished with this and I was sitting there and I felt this pop in my, right around my shoulder. Now a port, the line goes into directly into your heart. And so that way, when they're drawing blood, it's like, you just got this little spigot. It's this nifty little thing. Or when they're giving you something, like my treatment that I take takes 30 minutes. If it were to go into a vein, it would take over 3 hours because it goes right into your heart and is pumped out. And so I felt this pop and I thought, oh, that's not good. And because it goes into your heart, right? I mean, this is very concerning. Yeah. And I looked down and almost right away, I had grown a new boob. I mean, it was the weirdest thing in the world. It was like half a grapefruit was sitting on my chest. And I thought, this is not normal.
No.
And so, but I was like, cool, look, I got in, but it was not in the right spot. So, you know, husband, I think we need to go to the emergency room. And, you know, and they took one look at me and away I went. I mean, I got ahead of everybody, because yeah, that line goes into your heart. And what had happened was, one of the major blood vessels that was in that area, where they had, you know, removed all that tissue and everything, had ruptured. And so then it had just bled. And so they went in and cleaned it out and sewed it back up and did all those things. But almost my entire torso turned purple. I had a pretty major bleed, but yeah, I was like, cool, I got a new boob.
you have been through it. Yeah. And your outlook is just so phenomenal and so inspiring. And I'm just so grateful for you and for the work you're doing in the world and helping other people and coming on the show. Mm-hmm. I'm sure people want to know how they can get involved, where they can find you, how they can connect with you. So feel free to share.
Well, thank you so much. I mean, this really has been such a fun conversation, probably a little different than you were expecting, but that's all right. But so the website is www.tryingnottodie.live. And that will get you to, the website. You'll see, we do put a lot of resources there, a blog post, you know, all of those lovely things. It also has a link to our private Facebook page. Anybody can be part of our Facebook group. You don't have to be going through cancer. You don't have to be dealing with someone who has cancer, because we like to have fun there. We like to be inspirational and supportive. And so the link is there if you want to do that. But yeah, just tryingnottodie.live.
Well, thank you so much again, Deb. It was so wonderful to have you on. I appreciate your openness and your honesty and your sense of humor. If you are listening to this and you are going through it yourself, if you know someone, or like Deb said, you just want to go be part of an inspirational group, check out the links in the show notes. Everything is there. And thank you all so much. I hope you have a beautiful rest of your day and take care. I'll see you next time.